culture, discipline, accountability.
Mistreatment, misrepresentation.
Knowledge is power, y'all.
There has to be accountability.
This pandemic of toxic work culture and mistreatment has got to stop.
The podcast for federal employees by federal employees.
What's up? What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome. Welcome to Fed Up. I'm your host, Ron Speakman, and we have a guest today on the show. Today's guest, his name is Mike Fox. He's a city letter carrier out of Pennsylvania, and we're going to discuss today a little bit about toxic work culture and tie some other things in there with it. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ron. I'm really grateful to be here on your wonderful platform. I think it's great what you do for people. And I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on. Mike, tell me, how long have you been a city carrier for?
Okay. I've been for 10 years now. I was a CCA, what they call a city letter carrier assistant, for about a year and a half before I was converted to regular. But I've been in the post office total 10 years.
I bet you were so fucking happy when you made regular. You didn't want to do all that minion work, if you will, when you were a CCA.
Yes, when I finally got the notice that I was converted to full-time regular with benefits, it was perfect timing because I had a son on the way and was just starting a family. So it was a good feeling back then.
Mike, tell me, did you notice more of a difference when you became a regular, or was it the same when you were a CCA? Over a CCA being worse? Talk to me about, as far as the change in job for you, whether it be from management or the job itself and your responsibilities, whatever positive or negatives from going from a CCA to a regular position as a city letter carrier.
Well, that's a very great question and great comparison to try to make, because honestly, it's like I did feel that, okay, once I got regular, all the bullshit would be kind of over. Well, some of it was. I didn't have to worry about being sent around to other offices again. So in that regard, I was happy about that. But in regards to other things that came along down the pike that you're very familiar with, since you witnessed it firsthand with me, that type of bullshit, which I'll get into momentarily, made it seem like, oh God, it's it's bad on both ends. And I'm not a negative person. It takes a lot to get me upset.
Absolutely.
But I felt that it's happened more as a regular, honestly. At least that's the way I look at it now. When you look at things in hindsight, sometimes it's different. If you actually were back there at that moment, then you'd be like, oh my God, I'd rather be in the present. Because when I was a CCA, a substitute carrier, for those of you that aren't familiar with that term, I had this boss, and I understand that, you know, as part of the job, when you're not regular, they have to send you to different offices where they need help. And there's really nothing you can do about it. You could refuse it, but that type of career craft as a city carrier assistant, you really didn't have a lot of rights at that time. There you have more rights now. They're always on the first page of the union's renegotiations for every new contract. They always are the priority, but they weren't back then when I started. We were basically shit on.
Right.
So this first boss that I had, he was an OIC, which stands for officer in charge, which is, those of you that don't know the hierarchy of the post office, you have the postmaster, and then one step underneath that is an OIC, officer in charge.
We call them AICs, by the way, assholes in charge.
Well, that definitely applies to this guy I want to talk about. I've got so many explicatives coming up in my mind as I remember this. And honestly, when I didn't have to work with him anymore, this was months before I became regular, I was more happy about that than becoming regular. I was happy to not deal with this asshole anymore, because this guy just really picked the wrong time to be a dick to me. Now, my first year in the post office was the same year that I lost my father. And this is where it
really... Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Thank you. So it was 10 years ago this May when I lost him. So I was a brand new carrier. I'm working in New Jersey. This is before I transferred to Pennsylvania. So I'm dealing with this boss. And I thought he was a nice guy in the beginning, because he managed to make sure that I got off for a week so I could fly overseas where my father was living at the time and was living in hospice. So I was able to be with him during the last moments of his life. So that gave me the closure I needed. And I came back to work a week later. He even managed to, you know, pass around a card to the other carriers and put some money in it. And that made me feel, you know, like, okay, these people give a crap about me.
Right.
Well, since my father was cremated, I had my older brother and my mother, they both resided in the state of North Carolina. So they felt, well, why don't we have a memorial service from there? But it was held a month after my father's passing. So I was able to get some time off approved to go over there with no issue, no pushback, of course. And so, but this is where the rug was pulled underneath me. And I started to see the true colors of the United States Post Office, really. Yeah, this is where it really got ruined for me, especially with management. I started to see really what the monster I was dealing with. So I'm over in North Carolina. The memorial service is over, and I'm getting ready to head back. So as I, you know, get to the airport with my wife, we see another, you know, relative who's with his family. They're getting ready to head back to the same state, New Jersey, from North Carolina. Well, the plane wouldn't take off because there was, you know, going to be some bad weather in the air. Okay. That's something that's completely out of your control. There's really nothing you can do except stay the extra night and wait till, you know, it's clear to take off. Okay. Well, I call the OIAIC's phone number and he ghosts me, crickets, doesn't call me back. No acknowledgement. Okay. No problem. So next morning we're back at the airport. It's like 5 a.m. So I call my boss. I call the AIC and he answers, hello. Just letting you know, I called you yesterday, but I'm not going to be in today. The flight was canceled. And so I'm explaining to him what happened. And I said, I'll be in tomorrow, hopefully. And he's going, well, I just want to let you know, Michael J, when you come back here, you're going to be AWOL. And I was like, what? How can I be AWOL? This is out of my control. And he's like, well, we're going to talk tomorrow. And maybe if you get back today, maybe you can come to work. He thought maybe I was going to somehow get there early. You know, he like thought I was around the corner. So long story short, I didn't come to work that day because we didn't get there till like 2:30. So I only had like 2 hours left on my shift. So the next morning I come in there and I have documentation ready. So he calls me in for a PDI, which is a pre-disciplinary interview. So I go in there with the shop steward and I present this mountain of evidence, including a note from the airline explaining what had happened and printouts of all the cancellations. And so finally, I'm showing this to him. But on the front of this pile is a flyer or printout, the program for my father's memorial service, my dad's picture on it.
Okay.
So
what should be proof that you were actually at a funeral service?
Exactly. So he goes, okay, Michael J, this is a pre-disciplinary interview. So tell us what happened. So I go, okay, well, I have to come back for my father's memorial service. I hold that up. And as he's writing with his pen, he looks up and he's like, holy shit. And I'm thinking maybe I hit a nerve. Maybe he realized he's being an asshole. Well, he keeps going with his thing. And then he tries to compartmentalize what I'm saying. He's like, this isn't about you, Dad. This is about you coming to work. When you realize that the plane was going to take off, you should have sought out alternative transportation. And as I said to him, I said, do you have any idea how long it takes to drive from RDU to New York or New Jersey? And he goes, no, and I don't care. And I say, oh, yeah, well, you also don't care that my father just died. He's like, this isn't about your dad. This is about you coming to work. And then he backs up and says, well, I just want you to know, I'm very sorry about you losing your dad. I think I expressed that on multiple occasions. The shop steward says to me after this bullshit meeting, like, he's two-faced to do that, to say, okay, I said I'm sorry, I put money in the car, and then I can turn around and be a dick. Just a month later after you're grieving the loss of your dad. Something just that is so personal. And for the post office to expect you to compartmentalize and separate a part of you and realize I'm on the clock now, I got to be a robot, was just absurd.
Yeah,
but that was just the type of beast I was dealing with, and he was not held accountable for his actions until a year later, when that same shop steward had a baby, and he tried to discipline him for taking like 8 weeks off for
paternity leave, basically.
Paternity leave, exactly. So after that, the A ball was expunged from my record before I made regular, because he was doing that to a lot of people. So it wasn't just me.
Well, he already set the tone at that point anyway. You know, he set the tone from, you know, being basically an asshole in charge by doing what he did, the actions and what he said to you.
Yes.
Obviously you were at a funeral, your dad's funeral service. I'm sure you were there with other family members grieving with them as well, but totally out of your control. Yet management expects you to be there within the blink of an eye. Mind you, you were in a different state, correct?
Yes, I was in a different state. See? And then I had found out that when he was a clerk, like back in the 80s, when he was young, he got stranded in Africa, but nothing happened to him.
See, it's funny.
Goes to show you the favoritism that goes on.
Not just favoritism, but it's a toxic work culture that is promoted. Usually management is someone who was a carrier but couldn't hack it as a carrier. It doesn't happen all the time. But if I had to give a percentage, I would say 70-30. 70% being an ex-carrier who couldn't hack it as a carrier coming over. The other 30%, I would say half of that, 15, is probably a carrier who could do their job, however, got hurt on a job and transferred to a supervisor position or a management. Now, listen, not all management is bad out there. There are few legendary unicorns out there, if you want to call them that.
That are
great. And this is how all management should be. But my point of saying that some of this stuff was, and asking some of this stuff was, the toxic work culture that we deal with on a constant, it is promoted. How many times, Mike, have you seen in your career new management come in?
So many times, especially in just one office.
So many times, especially in one office.
When I transferred,
so let me ask you something, Mike.
Where I met you at, I saw so much turnover, more turnover with management than substitutes.
So let me ask you something. Let me ask you this, Michael. When someone new comes into that position, supervisor, postmaster, whatever the case is, 204B, for all you guys out there listening who are Postal Service, 204B, for you guys not, 204B is basically someone like a supervisor in training coming in before they become an actual supervisor. But when you see these new people come in, like, were they very personable with you at first and with anybody else? Did they treat you like a human being or did they treat you like a number?
Both of them, honestly. I got both types of treatment.
You got both types. So the ones that did see, Mike, that came in that actually did treat you like a human, then you see them go off into their actual management training. Now, when they come back from that management training, I think they go to district for that. Correct me if I'm wrong. But wherever they go for that training, when they come back, do you notice any kind of difference with their the way they carry themselves, the way they treat others, the way they view you guys? Speak on that, if you will.
Sure. I can think of one example of one particular supervisor that you know as well. And this particular person went through like this metamorphosis, because they would joke around with not just myself, but you as well. They got our irreverent humor, which helped us kind of take the edge off.
Absolutely.
And get through the day of this stressful job and to deal with the bullshit. So that having a laugh, taking the edge off, and this person would joke with us. But then once they came back from the train, they were extremely
dry
is right. And I remember I was dealing with some personal issues with my family at the time. And I tried to talk about that, not to get too personal, but I tried to address that at least, because it was affecting, you know, my work life. I understand sometimes the best thing to do is go to EAP, but sometimes to touch on it, you know, basically is doesn't hurt. Well, this manager just did completely acted like it didn't matter at all. And that's the type of treatment I dealt with that particular manager. And I thought, this is disgusting. Nobody should have to come to work and expect, okay, I'm going to just flip the switch here and just pretend like my family doesn't exist, when they're the reason that you come to work. They're the reason that you're showing up at this job. And they're the reason that you took the job in the first place, because you're like, okay, I get stability, I get benefits.
Right.
The bullshit that you have to deal with.
Lots and lots of bullshit.
Lots of it. And like people act like when you talk about it, especially when you talk to people outside the post office, they don't get it because they're not dealing with it.
Well, you just said something very interesting, and I totally agree. Those who don't work in the post office do not understand what transpires inside. I couldn't agree anymore. And it's not just our agency with the USPS. It is a lot of different agencies, federal agencies across the board, across this country. So, absolutely. Mike, if we could stay on the toxic work culture topic, do you have any other stories that maybe you want to share that come in into play? Something to explain to a listener who's maybe not in the federal government or federal agency as an employee or whatever the case is, even maybe Congress, if there's a politician listening, maybe explain to them so they could actually understand more. When we say toxic work culture, why we say that, I think we did already touch on it to some basic examples, but can you speak more on that?
Absolutely. Now, I was thinking in terms of a time when I actually got injured. Would it be all right if I talk about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I had gotten injured on my job and had experienced a knee injury. Okay. And any type of injury that you experience on the job is unpleasant. Now, with a knee injury, the thing about that is it's an internal thing. You don't always know if when it happened, if that's what the culprit was. And that was what was the case with me. Okay. So I'm on the job and I won't, you know, go into too many details, but because there was no fall involved, it was just the result of the repetitive nature of the job leading to my knee injury. I was still working. And then after a month, I reported it. And the same manager I was just talking about, not the first one, but the one that was very dry after coming back from supervisor training, from being a 204, being now a full supervisor.
We call them stupid visors, just so my audience knows.
Well, she was stupid visoring me for sure. I remember she's eating this cupcake and just looking at me real dry and then says, well, next time, let me know the day of, as if this was something that resulted from a catastrophic incident like a fall. And that was not the case with this. So that was just the beginning of the hell that I was going to endure with not just her, but with another supervisor, another postmaster that came in shortly after that, that worked above this lady. And the two of them were definitely in cahoots against me. So throughout this whole ordeal, that was absolutely disgusting and absolutely toxic. So about, I'd say maybe almost 2 months in this.
Mike, I want to just interrupt you one real quick. When you got hurt, did you take care of the forms right away? Did they help you fill out the proper documentation? Because at that time, we didn't have eComp at that time, correct? Everything was paper form.
I think eComp had just started, actually. And actually, to give them the benefit of the doubt, I remember since I had provided my email address, this supervisor, one good thing they did was they helped me set up my account. So I remember getting an email notification the day that she actually did process the form.
Got you.
And so that's how I was able to sign up for eComp to make the process easier later on.
So that's initial paperwork, correct?
Initial paperwork, yeah.
Now, was there any paperwork that they sat on purpose or held at all? Or
yes, there was.
There was. Can you talk on that a little bit too?
I sure can. So, okay, so this was when another supervisor, another postmaster came in and was working with this other lady. Okay, so the two of them were in codes. I ended up having to go out of work indefinitely. I just could not walk anymore. And so I was at home and I had a doctor's appointment that day to go over my MRI results. And the MRI results were going to tell me that I was going to need surgery. So long story short, I realized, okay, let me just print out the form from home, because I didn't have them to fill out the paperwork at work. So I thought, well, I'll just have them do it later. Okay, that was probably maybe my mistake. But the thing was, I wasn't at work, so I wasn't able to present them with their portion of the paperwork for that day, that doctor's visit. So anyway, I have the doctor fill out his part. And then when I show up at the office, not to work since I was out of work, but to tell them what was going to happen, told them I was going to need surgery. They sat on it, basically.
How long did they sit on that form, Mike?
I'd say about 2 weeks.
Jesus Christ.
And so I, no joke, I called them and they said, well, you're supposed to fill out, the supervisor is supposed to fill out their part first. And then the doctor, I'm like, yeah, well, I wasn't there.
You were, yeah, and you, and plus you were waiting for them. So if they're telling you they knew what the fuck they were supposed to do, they should have done it, but they didn't do it. That's what the whole thing about this situation is, right? They didn't do it, and they sat on it.
They sat on it, and they lied to me.
Wow.
This is how they lied to me. They called me up one afternoon. I'm at home, and they said that they mailed it to my doctor. Okay. I gave it a few days because I know working for the post office, how slow the mail gets processed. Through no fault of our own. So anyway, I wait a couple days.
Right.
I call up the doctor's office to give them the benefit of the doubt. Nothing. They never received anything. So you know what? I was out of work by that point for like almost 3 weeks. And not knowing the status of whether my case was going to get approved or not, not knowing when I was going to get surgery. So I'm dealing with all this toxicity, toxic work culture, even while I'm at home. So I just said, you know what, fuck it. And I did the black Sharpie method, which you told me about, but we're kind of like, that's a last resort. You may want to think about other alternatives first. Well, at that point, I had no other alternative. And I was having a shitty ass day. But when I took out that black Sharpie and wrote supervisor and postmaster refused to fill out their portion. And when I went on to eComp, scanned it, uploaded it, I felt this cathartic relief.
It gives you some kind of relief, absolutely, from the mistreatment that constantly goes on.
I needed some type of relief, and it gave me a satisfaction. I was laughing my ass off all day to myself. My wife had no idea why I was laughing. And this was the reason I called you. And about a year later, when I was, you know, back to work by that point, and when I went to a thing with you with the, help me out, what was it? The union training for workplace.
OWCP training.
OWCP, yeah.
Sure. I just want to touch on that real quick. We actually had a group called Federal Injury Centers come up and train our union stewards. They were great, informative. Chris and Jeannie Helms, shout out to you guys. I know when I went through my injury, I didn't know anything. I learned everything as I went through it myself. The only difference with me is I go to distance and I find and utilize every resource that I can and I have at my disposal. I think that's what separated me from everybody else and why I was able to learn so quickly everything. But Chris and Jeannie Helms from Federal Injury Centers, they're great. They established a network of doctors for us to use. And Mike, I apologize for cutting you off. Just real quick for the CA-17s. The CA-17s, they're basically an important form for us to basically protect our job when we're injured, you know, on the job or when we're not at work there. So they have to give you those forms. One side's for your doctor. One side is for your supervisor. Your doctor can't fill it out without the supervisor filling it out. However, in rare instances like your situation, they sat on it, whether it be from willful misconduct or uneducated, not knowing what the fuck to do, which I know for a fact. Oh, absolutely, was both. I know for a fact that they reached out to their people up top,
basically,
at the HRM office.
I got a challenge letter.
Out there, and you got a challenge letter. That's another. That's another story.
File. So that was added to.
But the CA-17 should have been filled out, and they knew it. She even said to you that it should have been filled out. They got to do it first. Well, bitch, get your ass in gear and fill the fucking form out. That's the way I see it. So what you did, so when you write on the black Sharpie method, I fucking love it. However, there are certain people that would argue that that is defacing a federal form.
Right. Bullshit.
However, tell me real quick, Mike, Did you get any kind of letter or told about that when you filled that out with the black Sharpie? And a quick answer, yes or no?
No, I got no thing telling me that exactly. It was invalid.
You had no repercussions from doing that. Not even in from fact, OWCP or DOL.
Right. No, from no one.
Thank you.
And the fact that it was used as a visual aid at that Federal Injury Center event was a really great feeling. I remember during the live chat, I'm laughing so hard because it was just so satisfying for me.
Yes.
To basically just stick it to these two people who really made my life a living hell. And, you know, I'll just say this to backpedal just a little bit. The day before I went out and met with the doctor to go over my MRI results for my, you know, torn meniscus in my right knee. This is what really was horrifying to deal with. They thought I was not in the building at the time. They thought I was already on the road. I'd already, you know, finished my office functions and I was on the street at the time because they had to do some carrier work that day and their faces were not pointed outwards to see who's in the building and who's not, which that kind of is a bit of a concern in itself.
Stupid visor.
So, yeah. So, but they had a chance to gossip and guess who they were talking about?
They were talking about you probably to the shop steward.
I don't remember him being in the building, but I'm sure they did have conversations with him when I was not there. So this is what I hear, though, and it's like being a fly on the wall, except I'm a 6-foot fly on the wall. This is what I hear.
What did you hear?
Oh, my knee hurts. I can't come to work.
And then the other supervisor, oh, he's something else.
Wow.
See, I was just horrified.
Yeah. Yeah. To hear that. And you're a hard worker. I know that you're a hard worker. I can attest to that. And I put my name behind
that.
Thank you. The CA-17, though, however, the black Sharpie method, you did not get any kind of repercussions. So for me, I'm actually kind of jealous. I didn't get to fucking use it. but at the same time, I'm glad that I got through everything that I did.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up to me. Because when I was at wit's end, you thought about it. And you said, you may want to think about your family, but. Remember, when you work for the government, you know, it's really hard to get fired. I mean, you might get some pushback.
Yes, you have to push back.
You might have to deal with some pushback, but in retaliation, which I dealt with behind the scenes. But that's the thing. The months that I was off that summer, I was just in the back of my mind thinking, what are they up to? What are they planning? And sure enough, they did do some things. The challenge letter was in my file, and basically they were trying to just dispute whether this injury was real or not. Yeah. And that's just, you know, like you said, I'm a conscientious worker. And for them to question that, really.
Well, that's what they're taught to do.
That's what they're told to do.
Do you realize that, and I know there's supervisors and postmasters out there, that will challenge what I'm about to say. And I really don't give a fuck because we see it all the time happen about the change that we talked about earlier here when they come back from this training. But I've been told by someone who I trust very much, who's a good source to me, who is a postmaster, by the way, and I will not name names. However, in a nutshell, you're basically taught that an angry carrier is a good carrier. So it makes you wonder, do they push your buttons on purpose when they come back from this training, expecting you to work harder? For me, like you said yourself, I definitely don't like when someone questions my work ethic. It fucking pisses me off. And it wouldn't anybody. I feel like no one can match my work ethic. That's how I feel like. But that's how I was brought up. I will do anything. I will go the distance. And you're viewed as a quote unquote, they call you a runner. Well, for me, my pace is naturally fast. I can get done much quicker. Always could have, but I always went by my pace, which to my listeners out there, always go at your own damn pace. If they try to get you to go quicker, fuck that. You go at your own pace, right?
Yes.
Especially when you're on a timed route with your route and they're out there walking with you. Guys, listen, man, go at your own pace. If they mess with you,
don't let them intimidate you.
No, don't let them intimidate you. But Mike, before I go move on, I wanted to just finish that CA-17 with the black Sharpie to my listeners out there. So the black Sharpie method, if management does not give you a CA-17 within a timely fashion, and you can make that call yourself on a timely fashion. For me, a timely fashion is now. when I request it, especially if it's not now, you know, exigent circumstances exist, then that same day at least. Minimum right now, maximum that same day. But it's your call as a carrier to your definition of a timely response for that form. When you reach that extension there and you still don't have one, print one out. You can go online, print one out from the Department of Labor's website. Federal Injury Centers has forms on their site. You can get them in multiple places, people. Just go online and get them, print it out. Side A and side B, one side's for your doctor, one side is for
you might be in
your
a
supervisor. But hold on, Mike, hold on. There's the black Sharpie method is when they don't fill it out, take the black Sharpie and put management refused to fill this out.
Yes.
That's simple with the Sharpie method. And that's exactly what you did, Mike, correct?
That is what I did, correct.
Awesome. And it worked out in your favor. And for me, the best part, and guys, this is why I want to do Fed Up, accountability. We have to hold management, our agency, our coworkers, everybody, just like we would hold ourselves accountable. We need to hold people in authority accountable for their actions or non-actions in this case. So black Sharpie method, people, use it when you need to. But Mike, you touched on a great point there. I want to get into with a toxic work culture that is promoted from management that carries over to coworkers, because now it sets the tone for what's tolerable, what's not, how we can act, you know, what we can get away with. So you went into harassment. Mike, I want to get into that. Talk to me about harassment. If I'm mistaken here, you can correct me, but I think the harassment started once you started getting, once you did get injured, but also when you got injured, I was helping you go along the way because at that time when you got injured, I've already been through it and I've educated myself well enough to help others. So if you can speak on the harassment, how I helped you, but also how that harassment got worse when I was on my modified job assignment at work and you were coming in work, you know, you were coming in hurt to drop off some paperwork. And tell the listeners what happened when you came that day as well. This is hilarious. This shows that when you know your shit and you help other carriers or other people, other coworkers, management does not like that. But go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm dropping off my paperwork that one day and I'm walking in with a cane and everyone's just, you know, setting up their routes. But I'm getting these like weird looks, you know, from people. And the only person that says anything is the shop steward. So long story short, I go into the office, yada, yada, yada. I come out of the office and with the paperwork, you know, limping. And then finally I said, you know what, this, what they just told me in the office just didn't sound right. And I wanted to,
what did they tell you in the office?
Okay. This is what they were telling me. They were going to offer me what you had been doing as well in a modified job assignment.
And okay.
Because of the uncertainty of dates, I didn't want to refuse or accept the job based on that.
Which so by the way, go ahead.
I wanted to talk to you about that at that moment. So you were, you know, at your phone and computer station for your modified job assignment. And I was going to go back to that room prior to exiting the building. Well, the postmaster's right behind me. And this is what she says to me in her exasperated voice. Are you going to talk to Ron? And I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. And she's like, you need to leave the building.
Wow. So she knew that you were going to come back to me and ask you to leave the building, probably because she knew I was going to help you. She doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. Most management doesn't.
And the fact that you and I had each other's phone numbers, I was going to talk to you on the phone afterwards, which I did.
You could have came back. It's all good. I could have took a 10-minute break and talked to you. It's not a big deal. They wanted you off the property, which was bullshit.
Which was bullshit. But what made it funny was I walked past this one rural carrier, and I just said, hey, what's up? And he was real, So he was starting to treat me the way he was treating you at the time. And
which is how really exactly?
Fun. Okay, well, anytime he sees somebody injured, he thinks they're fabricating the injury.
Sure.
And so he treats them a certain way.
So all of a sudden, he's a fucking medical doctor with a medical degree.
Exactly.
What an idiot.
So he just kind of brushes Miller. And then the next thing I hear come out of your mouth, because you open up your door, because you saw I was leaving, and you go, "Hey, Mike, don't get hurt, otherwise no one will talk to you." And I laugh because that's exactly what I dealt with.
Exactly.
People that used to say, "This is a great family," were ignoring me.
No.
I'm thinking, "Oh my God, we got to work extra because you're going to be out all fucking summer."
Yeah, that's no fucking family. You help people when they're down. You don't kick them when they're down. And that's exactly what happens at least what happened in our office. And I know it happens at many of the smaller offices, some of the large ones. Regardless, though, it happens all over the country. But the fact that...
And I've had good experiences before. And like what you said, not all managers are bad. I've had bosses that when I... prior to transferring when I was, regular back in New Jersey, I did have bosses that actually did look after my best interests and did understand when I was ill that I was not capable of doing my jobs to full capacity or if I needed to be out, no problem. So I just wanted to throw that out there that, they're not all bosses are like what we're
describing. Already talking about the supervisors and the people who are just no idea of doing their jobs and who don't do their jobs.
Telling you how to deal with them. And, that's the whole idea, to just show us what we did so people just don't have to go to the depths of hell.
So speak more on the harassment from management and coworkers in general. You can feel free to use
in general
one or more examples if you want, but just tell me more about the harassment. Tell our listeners how you experience harassment from both management and coworkers after your injury, especially.
After my injury, when I came back to work just before coming on the clock, the shop steward and his buddy, who he's known for years, who works there. No welcome back when I come back. Just shunning me. They're probably thinking, "We had to work all summer without you. We all had to, pull our weight." It wasn't like, "Oh, you feeling better?" But
no compassion.
Right. So it's like I'm supposed to feel bad, And then when I go to that same shop steward about the thing, he's like, "Oh, no one said anything, and if they did, it was in one ear out the other."
Bullshit.
Bullshit is right.
Oh, if they did say something, which usually correlates to they did say something.
They did say something. I know. And I know there was conversations that were probably had about my thing behind closed doors. And
what about the workroom floor? Did you hear stuff openly? Obviously, you heard management talking about your knee, but what about coworkers in your shop steward?
Witnessing firsthand. Yeah. I've heard that before. Yeah, they're talking about so-and-so is out because of this.
Yeah.
So-and-so is out because of that.
So that's a Privacy Act violation, guys, just so you know.
And there's been paperwork that's been left for other carriers when they were injured.
Yep.
Not talking about you and I. It would be left by the fax machine with their personal information written on there. Yep. And then I'd hear supervisors say, "Well, this one's out for a knee injury. This one's out for a hip injury." Ooh, you don't do that. I don't care if this is a small office.
So they didn't protect private information either. Hence, that's also a Privacy Act violation, by the way. If that's left over on the supervisor's desk, which is a common area where people will go, that's a violation. And discussing your shit with anybody else openly on that workroom floor and anybody hears it, which they have in both of our cases, because that person came and told us as well what was going on, who said what. That's a violation. But tell me what you exactly experienced from your coworkers, which to me is worse. Like, we expect it to happen from management because we already know there are assholes and supervisors out there. But for it to happen to our quote unquote family, as these coworkers would say, we're a big family, which I could say is like bullshit. It's more like a click. Exactly.
It's more like a click, because I know.
You know what? You mentioned click, and I just want to throw this out there just for humor. But me and you have a term. It's called BBIT, Boys Back in Town Crew.
Yeah.
Other people I talk with, they call them the GOBC, the good old boys click. So it depends on what part of the country you're in, but we all have a GOBC or BBIT group of people in our offices. But yeah, go ahead. Speak on that, Mike.
So this is what I've noticed is that the click isn't just your coworkers. The click could be management joining in with the coworkers. And I would see that happen,
right?
Especially with this one postmaster, when the shop steward would come back from the street, he'd run after him like a little girl. And they would be like, whispering, buddy, buddy. Just another example of shop steward in bed with management.
You know, it's a funny story. I remember I forgot my arrow keys the one time when I came back and I saw that happening. You remember what I said when I jumped out of the truck? Do you remember? Oh. I was like, well, look at this shit. What's happening here?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what was funny was you didn't even say anything. You just kind of like talked with your hands like,
because I knew exactly what was going on. You know, I call a spade a spade. I'm like, look at this.
You got him to admit it later.
Yeah. And they dispersed.
You know, that's the thing. The dock at this particular office is the spot for gossip.
Oh, gossip queens. A bunch of men gossip queens.
Exactly. So, you know, we've heard so many horrifying things. You heard one day as I'm heading to work because I was on restrictions at the time and everyone had to do extra work, but not me because I was still, you know, recovering from my injury.
Right.
A few months I was post-surgery.
Correct.
And so you hear this word, Fox, no pivot. And pivot, for those of you that don't know what that means, that's like
extra work
on top of your ass. Yeah. So it's like Fox, no extra work. So already they were gossiping, thinking, oh, we got to carry this extra weight. But this guy doesn't have to do anything. So that's harassment right there.
It can be. It promotes a toxic work environment. I went through two and a half years of fucking hell, people.
Yes, I kid you not. What I went through, honestly, I'm not minimizing my shit, but I'm not going to say it's nothing compared to what, but in a way it is.
Because it really is.
You did go through the grinder and you went through a little while. And that's why you were able to help me overcome this stuff. You know, because you were dealing with it firsthand. And during that time I was out, you were just hearing all kinds of disgusting things being thrown out between management and coworkers.
Oh, yeah. And I called them out for their shit. That's what you all need to do.
I had an EEO filed. and because of this toxic work culture, and I was talking about them saying, oh, my knee hurts.
Yeah.
Oh, he's something else. I ended up withdrawing the EEO because I was trying to get back to work. Anyway.
Sure.
I was just trying to
focus on the bigger picture. Right.
Right, the bigger picture. I was thinking about my family. I was thinking about this. But what was funny was when I'm telling you what the statement said, what they said when they were interviewed during the EEO mediation process. How one of them said, because I was telling them in my statement that obviously my injury was not important to them, and how the management said, "Oh, it is important to us." Because I'm so, it affects the whole office. I'm so anxious for him to get back to work. And what did you say to one of the clerks after I texted you that?
Oh, about you say, what's that?
He said like, oh, I'm so anxious for Mike to get back to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I reiterated it, what she said. And she got,
party
she got big day. Fucking eyes. Like, how did I know that? That's, you got to have fun in this job, people, if you want to make it through.
You have to. I mean, you have to have a crazy sense of humor because otherwise there's people that kill themselves.
Absolutely. And you know what?
And honestly, it takes you to a dark place, and it took me to a dark place. It took me to despair.
Sure, sure.
Folks, and I – honestly, you helped me get through it, and turning to spiritual solutions – focusing on my family got me through
this
and continues to get me through it. And
good.
It doesn't stop though. The nightmare continues on.
Oh, it always continues.
It continues. I mean, I still deal with this shit.
I've dealt with shit that is, and that's exactly it. We're all fucking fed up. And a lot of people feel like me, they feel like you, or they experience things like you just explained. Honestly, man, the 2.5 years of constant harassment, bullying, workplace violence. Yep. When I say bully, no one came up to me and say, I'm going to beat your ass, Ron, because that wouldn't fly with me. I'd fuck them up. But
there's other forms of bullying.
There's bullying. You said it, passive aggressive. And that comes from management basically promoting this kind of behavior, right?
Yeah, they're joining in on what they perceive.
But it's not just they're joining in; they're allowing it and saying it's okay, it's tolerable. So when they're saying all this bullshit and being passive aggressive, you call them out on their stuff. They play victim, and now you're the aggressor. It's an ugly situation. It's an ugly culture, And quite frankly, for me personally, I'm fed up with that bullshit. There's a lot of things I'm fed up with, but that's one of the big ones I think that needs to be handled. But again, that comes down to poor management.
Yes.
And again, I want to reiterate on things. When I said I'd fuck you up, listen, I'm not making any threats, people. I'm just talking about my experience, about what I went through. I could have easily knocked some of these people out with my background. But for me, the bigger picture was getting my retirement accepted and getting out of that toxic place so I can focus on my family and move on with my life. So I swallowed a lot of shit. I fought back in different ways, right? I fought back by educating myself. I fought back by learning how to fight back with my words, but not just my words, with policy and procedure that management accepted to in the contract, but also federal code of regulation, using that towards my, my advantage, just educating myself all the way around with basically NLRB, that helped sometimes it doesn't, but, you can file the EEOs. I even called Congress, got Congress involved. There's a lot of things that we can do as carriers. You can even call a threat assessment team if you feel like you're being, if you feel like you're being bullied, or there's a hostile work environment being promoted and you're dealing with constantly, and especially from your management, you can call your district's threat assessment team, have them come in and investigate. Your postmaster or supervisor, whoever it is, will be removed from that station, from that office, until the investigation is completed. You got to have thorough evidence.
Good to know.
And yes, absolutely. But the documentation has to be spot on. Have coworkers. And this is another thing that gets on my mind, or gets on my nerves. Coworkers, a lot of them will bitch, moan, or complain about whatever they're complaining about. But when it comes time to do something about it, they clam the fuck up and they shut down. So again, if you're going to complain, have the decency and the balls to fucking step up and do something about it. For example, when I got injured, Mike, you were one of them, but also there was somebody else who I'm not going to name. They know who they are if they listen to this podcast, who wasn't even a carrier, by the way. But both you and them wrote witness statements for me on numerous occasions for me to have. I had a two and a half year, whatever it is, somewhere in that time frame of documentation from everything, from management to coworkers, everything, the mistreatment.
That.
Yeah. All the mistreatment. I could have got people removed. That's how deep it went. Straight to the OIG. By the way, when I went to this postmaster, this new postmaster we got towards the end of my career here, his eyes got large. Remember, I told you that his eyes got large when I told him and handed him this documentation. He said, "I got to turn this into the OIG. I don't know how to handle this." What do you mean? You've been here for how many years? You're close to retirement yourself. You don't know how to handle this shit. This is what I'm talking about. The management that's in place. It's not like the old days when it was veterans who were running the ship, who were behind the helm, who there was structure, discipline, and accountability. That's what they promoted within their management regime. Now, when all of them started retiring, right, especially from like the 90s and stuff, I think around the 90s is when it started to take a turn. Maybe late 80s. I only know from other people. I wasn't involved in the post office myself at that time. But around that time, let's just call it 90s, is when these veterans started retiring, right? Now, when you fill those with people off the streets and these lazy carriers who couldn't hack it, then filling them in positions. Now you got people who don't know what the fuck they're doing, number one. Number two, couldn't hack it as a carrier themselves, who are terrible. So now you're promoting this behavior. And the rest is just, it just falls on the agency and the person behind the helm. So again, regardless however you look at it, where you point the finger to this person or that person or the agency, it still falls on accountability. Without accountability, structure, and discipline, listen, this is what's going to happen. You're going to have this as a totality of the circumstances that you as management and the agency are allowing. So, that's all I really got to say, but you spoke with the harassment and stuff, especially when you got injured. What about the favoritism? Do you see the favoritism real quick? Touch on that.
Oh yes, I do see that. I see that if you don't go through the OWCP channels, the workman's comp channels, with your injury, which is the right thing to do.
Right.
If you don't trudge that road that we've trudged, Rod,
this is what's going to happen. You're going to be treated very well. If you bill your own insurance and somehow tell your doctor this didn't happen at work, you're going to be treated by your coworkers and management like you're a god almost. But if you do what we did, it's the opposite. You're not going to get that favoritism, quote unquote, that these people that basically acted like the injury didn't happen at work, whatever they tell their doctors. I don't know what conversations they have, but whatever conversations they have between them and their doctors, that's private. But whatever they do,
exactly,
it works out in their favor as far as being treated better. But if you do the right thing, which is just, this is what's happened to people in history. They do the right thing, they get treated like shit.
Right.
And that's, they get ousted.
Yeah, they get ousted.
People just don't talk to them.
You're basically shunned from that quote unquote family of coworkers.
Family click.
Yeah, more like click. A click that I don't want to be a fucking part of or associated with.
I know. It's disgusting. You know, it's just horrible. And like you said earlier about these people who end up going up, rising up the ranks and becoming the bosses. Yeah, they're basically incompetent, because that's what I dealt with from the beginning. Like this guy.
Well, you know what? Supervisor is a noun, right?
Supervisor.
Supervisor is a noun. And the definition of supervisor is a person who's promoted to the point of incompetence.
And that's exactly what they are, is incompetent, because the first boss I talked about at the beginning of the hour, when it just started out, he was exactly that, because I felt like when I dealt with that particular boss, I was back in high school again, and one of the bullies was now my boss. And I was like, I haven't dealt with this for 30 years, and now I'm dealing with it now? This is disgusting that these are the type of people that are at the helm of management.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It blows my mind, and that they're not held accountable, like you said. They basically get away from it scot-free, but yet they have the power to terminate one of the substitutes if they want to.
That, yeah.
Or they did back then, at least. Back then. I know it's changed.
It's not that easy to get fired. I mean, one thing I think they should fucking do is they should be able to do random drug tests. I mean, how many of you people are tired of fucking people?
That, but I agree with that. For safety reasons?
Yes.
Yeah, because I always worry, like, what if somebody is intoxicated behind the wheel and God forbid?
Seen it firsthand, and I'm sure it happens more times than we all know. People are either drunk or high as fuck, coming in, swaying at their case, can barely stand or see. They're incoherent. They can't form sentences. They're stumbling into the words. And I mean, and then you got these people falling asleep behind the wheel, parked in the middle of the street with the truck running.
Right in the middle of the medium strip, yeah.
Listen, guys, if you have a carrier like this in your office, listen, first and foremost, I wish them nothing but the best, and I hope they get the help that they deserve, right?
Yes.
But
hopefully they get sober.
If you're constantly, now I'm going to speak from a coworker standpoint, that's me speaking as a human being. I hope you get the help that you deserve and that you need, and you get better so you can be a better version of yourself. However, as a coworker, as coworkers of people like this, we're pissed off because we got to do the pivot. We got to do the extra fucking work of not being able for them to finish in 8 hours. But this is the reason why they're fucked up. They're given the help, which is usually us if it's not CCAs, or all of us for that matter. But this, it's a safety issue, like you said, Mike. And the biggest thing is if management's not doing anything, I'm going to fucking say this because this is what it is. If you're tired of it, and he's not getting help, or he constantly gets help, or whatever the case is, or whoever it is, he or she, they go into rehab, they come out, they check themselves out, they're still on their up to no good, and you're doing their regular business here. You can call the police, because the post office can't dispute that. You understand? So if we go, and I've seen this, guys, if management continues to do nothing, that's a safety violation. It's going to take for that carrier to hurt or worse, kill himself or somebody else, hurt or kill somebody else, for the post office to open up their eyes and be like, wow, this is a problem. We need to take care of this. We don't want that to happen to either that carrier or the innocent bystander. So
no,
if there's a safety issue, something of that nature, call your local police department and report it as anonymous. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. Especially
think about the public safety of everyone. It's not about getting anybody in trouble. It's about
exactly
keeping our communities safe, because that's where these that's where we deliver to. We deliver to communities, deliver to safe areas. There's kids, right. There's old ladies, there's old men. You know, we want to make sure that we're looking out for the community as well.
Right.
So it's from a community standpoint, a safety standpoint.
Sure. And that's what we need to look at there on that end. We're going to finish up with this right here, because I know we're running a little bit over on the podcast here, but that's okay. This is your platform, not just mine. So we've been trying to make change. There's been documentaries made. There've been numerous cases out there. One, whether it be on a grievance side or someone suing the agency for something, who've have won, by the way. There are EEOs who've been really huge EEOs that get won. So there are big remedies out there, you know, but just like a good management, they are unicorns, right? And you got to have the documentation to get that going. So
I wish I could focus on the good part. Maybe that's another show. But then again, the name of the show is Fed Up, though, after all. And, you know, sometimes in order to eradicate a problem or look for solutions, we have to talk about the
elephant in the room. And we got to acknowledge the good things too. I mean, there's some good things to our jobs. You know, for us, it was the customers, our customers on our route, or some of our coworkers say our route. our customers are what make our jobs pleasant. Now, there's times just like anywhere else, you know, like your spouse or whoever, there's run-ins and arguments, but that's okay. For the most part, our customers are great to us and we appreciate them. So, to all of you who are in a great office, you have that rare unicorn of management on your side and your station. Listen, enjoy that, cherish that. I would love for you to come on the show. I even talk about that, and maybe we can turn that into, this is how management should be. This is what we should expect as coworkers, but not just coworkers, employees of theirs, but a perfect office is a rarity. I would love to have you on the show if you do experience that. So if you listen to this, drop me a email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Drop me an email, drop me a line. If you want to come on the show, talk about your story, share your stories, talk about any kind of issues that you have going on, and perhaps maybe we can get you some help for some of those issues if you need it at that time. So, but Mike, man, listen, we can actually get on another time and talk about a different topic if you want. I appreciate you jumping on today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on. And listen, stay safe out there, brother. And is there any kind of message?
You.
Absolutely. Is there any kind of message you want to leave with people out there before we go?
Honestly, like I'm going to say, if anybody is in despair, just don't give up. Don't do anything stupid. Talk about the stuff before you decide to join the silent majority. Please just speak up and come on the show too, because you don't have to go through the literal hell we went through. You don't have to.
Right.
And things will get better. Things will get better.
Just basically don't stop fighting, guys.
Don't stop fighting. Be your own advocate. Be your own advocate. You told me that, so I'm going to tell it to the others. Be your own advocate.
Absolutely. Be your own advocate. That you're the best advocate for yourself at the end of the day.
Exactly.
All right. And Mike, real quick, is there anybody out there that if someone was listening to this podcast and they find themselves basically... how should I say? They're stuck. They're in a situation, but they're not saying anything or scared to say something. What would your message be to that particular one person in the audience listening right now, other than what we just said right now earlier before this question?
Say something.
Say
Speak
something.
Up.
All right.
Yeah. I would say something.
All right. For my listeners out there, I like to leave a little quote at the end of all my talks and all my interviews, my shows. I'm actually going to leave you two today. So before we close out the show, one, respect is earned. Honesty is appreciated. Trust is gained. Loyalty is returned. This goes out to management out there. Respect is earned. Honesty is appreciated. Trust is gained and loyalty is returned. I mean, that goes without saying. I'm not even going to get into that. But also, I want to leave you with one other saying, just something to make you think about. Those of you who are having maybe trouble with yourselves, speaking up or saying something or standing up and advocating and fighting for yourselves. And that is, would you rather be at war with yourself and at peace with the world, or at peace with yourself and at war with the world? It's a tough one. I think I walked the fine line on that one for a very long time until I retired. And I'm where I'm at today. So I know where I stand with that quote, but ask yourself that and what's more important to you. So guys, I thank you for tuning into the show. Mike, again, thank you for being in.
Thanks again for having me, Ron.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure having you. That about does it here for us at Fed Up. Please don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you are fed up like everyone else is and want to share your story and experiences, your issues and frustrations, and want your voice to be heard, I invite you to be a guest on this show. There's strength in numbers, and together, by sharing our stories, we can and will make the change that is needed. Just send me an email at one.fedup.podcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the number 1.fedup.podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Again, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, stay safe out there, my friends.